Reardon sat without moving. The muscles of his cheeks pulled tight. But his glance was indifferent, focused only by the faint pull of morbid curiosity. "You are a businessman, Mr. Reardon. This is a proposition which you cannot afford to ignore. On the one hand, you are gambling against great odds. You are bucking an unfavorable public opinion. You run a good chance of losing every penny you put into Reardon Metal. On the other hand, we can relieve you of the risk and the responsibility at an impressive profit, an immediate profit, much larger than you could hope to realize from the sale of the metal for the next 20 years. The State Science Institute is a scientific establishment, not a commercial one, said Reardon. What is it that they're so afraid of? You are using ugly, unnecessary words, Mr. Reardon. I am endeavoring to suggest that we keep the discussion on a friendly plane. The matter is serious. I am beginning to see that. We are offering you a blank check on what is, as you realize, an unlimited account. What else can you want? Name your price. The sale of the rights to Reardon Metal is not open to discussion. If you have anything else to say, please say it and leave. The man leaned back, looked at Reardon incredulously, and asked, What are you after? I? What do you mean? You're in business to make money, aren't you? I am. You want to make as big a profit as possible, don't you? I do. Then why do you want to struggle for years, squeezing out your gains in the form of pennies per ton, rather than accept a fortune for Reardon Metal? Why? Because it's mine. Do you understand the word? The man sighed and rose to his feet. I hope you will not have cause to regret your decision, Mr. Reardon, he said. The tone of his voice was suggesting the opposite. Good day, said Reardon. I think I must tell you that the State Science Institute may issue an official statement condemning Reardon Metal. That is their privilege. Such a statement would make things more difficult for you.
Undoubtedly.
As to further consequences? The man shrugged. This is not the day for people who refuse to cooperate. In this age, one needs friends. You are not a popular man, Mr. Reardon.
What are you trying to say?
Surely you understand.
I don't.
Society is a complex structure. There are so many different issues awaiting decision, hanging by a thin thread. We can never tell when one such issue may be decided, and what may be the decisive factor in a delicate balance. Do I make myself clear?
No.
The red flame of poured steel shot through the twilight. An orange glow, the color of deep gold, hit the wall behind Reardon's desk. The glow moved gently across his forehead. His face had an unmoving serenity. The State Science Institute is a government organization, Mr. Reardon. There are certain bills pending in the legislature which may be passed at any moment. Businessmen are peculiarly vulnerable these days. I am sure you understand me.
Reardon rose to his feet. He was smiling.
He looked as if all tension had left him.
No, Dr. Potter, he said, I don't understand. If I did, I'd have to kill you.
The man walked to the door, then stopped and looked at Reardon in a way which for once was simple human curiosity. Reardon stood motionless against the moving glow on the wall. He stood casually, his hands in his pockets. Would you tell me, the man asked, just between us? It's only my personal curiosity. Why are you doing this?
Reardon answered quietly. I'll tell you. You won't understand. You see, it's because Reardon Metal is good.
Dagny could not understand Mr. Moen's motive. The Amalgamated Switch and Signal Company had suddenly given notice that they would not complete her order. Nothing had happened. She could find no cause for it, and they would give no explanation. She had hurried to Connecticut to see Mr. Moen in person, but the sole result of the interview was a heavier, grayer weight of bewilderment in her mind. Mr. Moen stated that he would not continue to make switches of Reardon Metal. For sole explanation, he said, avoiding her eyes, Too many people don't like it.
What?
Reardon Metal, or you're making the switches?
Both, I guess. People don't like it. I don't want any trouble.
What kind of trouble?
Any kind.
Have you heard a single thing against Reardon Metal that's true? Ah, who knows what's true? That resolution of the National Council of Metal Industries said, look, you've worked with metals all your life. For the last 4 months, you've worked with Reardon metal. Don't you know that it's the greatest thing you've ever handled? He did not answer. Don't you know it? He looked away. Don't you know what's true? Hell, Miss Taggart, I'm in business. I'm only a little guy. I just want to make money. How do you think one makes it? But she knew that it was useless. Looking at Mr. Moen's face, at the eyes which she could not catch, she felt as she had felt once on a lonely section of track when a storm blew down the telephone wires, that communications were cut, and that words had become sounds which transmitted nothing. It was useless to argue, she thought, and to wonder about people who would neither refute an argument nor accept it. Sitting restlessly in the train on her way back to New York, she told herself that Mr. Moen did not matter, that nothing mattered now, except finding somebody else to manufacture the switches. She was wrestling with a list of names in her mind, wondering who would be easiest to convince, to beg, or to bribe. She knew the moment she entered the anteroom of her office that something had happened. She saw the unnatural stillness, with the faces of her staff turned to her as if her entrance were the moment they had all waited for, hoped for, and dreaded. Eddie Willers rose to his feet and started toward the door of her office, as if knowing that she would understand and follow. She had seen his face. No matter what it was, she thought, she wished it had not hurt him quite so badly. The State Science Institute, he said quietly when they were alone in her office, has issued a statement warning people against the use of Reardon metal. He added, it was on the radio. It's in the afternoon papers. What did they say? Dagny, they didn't say it. They haven't really said it, yet it's there. And it isn't. That's what's monstrous about it. His effort was focused on keeping his voice quiet. He could not control his words. The words were forced out of him by the unbelieving, bewildered indignation of a child screaming in denial at his first encounter with evil. What did they say, Eddie? You'd have to read it. He pointed to the newspaper he had left on her desk. They haven't said that Reardon metal is bad. They haven't said that it's unsafe. What they've done is... His hands spread and dropped in a gesture of futility. She saw at a glance what they had done. She saw the sentences. It may be possible that after a period of heavy usage, a sudden fissure may appear, though the length of this period cannot be predicted. The possibility of a molecular reaction, at present unknown, cannot be entirely discounted. Although the tensile strength of the metal is obviously demonstrable, certain questions in regard to its behavior under unusual stress are not to be ruled out. Although there is no evidence to support the contention that the use of the metal should be prohibited, a further study of its properties would be of value. We can't fight it. It can't be answered, Eddie was saying slowly. We can't demand a retraction. We can't show them our tests or prove anything. They've said nothing. They haven't said a thing that could be refuted and embarrass them professionally. It's the job of a coward. You'd expect it from some con man or blackmailer, but Dagny, it's the State Science Institute. She nodded silently. She stood, her eyes fixed on some point beyond the window. At the end of a dark street, the bulbs of an electric sign kept going on and off, as if winking at her maliciously. Eddie gathered his strength and said in the tone of a military report, Taggart's stock has crashed. Ben Neely quit. The National Brotherhood of Road and Track Workers has forbidden its members to work on the Rio Norte line. Jim has left town. She took her hat and coat off, walked across the room, and slowly, very deliberately, sat down at her desk. She noticed a large brown envelope lying before her. It bore the letterhead of Reardon Steel. That came by special messenger right after you left, said Eddie. She put her hand on the envelope, but did not open it. She knew what it was. The drawings of the bridge. After a while, she asked, Who issued that statement? Eddie glanced at her and smiled briefly, bitterly, shaking his head. No, he said. I thought of that, too. I called the Institute long distance and asked them. No, it was issued by the office of Dr. Floyd Ferris, their coordinator. She said nothing. But still, Dr. Stadler is the head of that institute. He is the institute.
He must have known about it. He permitted it. If it's done, it's done in his name.
Dr. Robert Stadler. Do you remember when we were in college how we used to talk about the great names in the world, the men of pure intellect, and we always chose his name as one of them? And
he stopped.